properly the reflect following the views program of is for media, entertainment WPRB and basic radio, informational purposes only. Staff.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media,
this WPRB Radio, its management, or staff.
Talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bobay. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bobay.
At 437-5000 or 1-888-34-5000.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Bobay.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is your station for talk and business. For the whole hour, we'll be available to help you out at 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Those of you who are familiar with the program know that I don't talk an awful lot about what the market did in one day. I usually give you a summary, you know. And today, markets all hit all-time highs. That's good. I'm not selling anything because of this. However, I want to point out to you that markets fall from peaks. Markets do not fall from low points. They fall from periods like where we are right now. So don't be overweighted. You know, don't be greedy. Make sure that if you are my age, you probably don't want to have 100% stocks unless you feel like you're behind in your savings for retirement and you're kind of playing catch-up. Then sometimes we do see a time when it might be appropriate to be a little bit more risky than might be appropriate for your age. A good rule of thumb, once you hit 50, consider anyway, if you've saved enough, consider a 50-50 mix of stocks and bonds. And you should also have some commodities, energy, and real estate, I think, in a full-blown modern portfolio. It also needs to be global. But today, the good old U.S. of A came through strongly. The Dow closed at 20,269, up 95 points. I'm just laughing because I can't read these numbers anymore. They're too small. I'm 58, if you're curious. 38 years experience in the financial business, certified financial planner professional, as is all of the hosts on the program. The younger voice that you hear, Nathan, my son on Wednesdays, in training to achieve pretty soon, I believe, his certified financial planner certification. We just happen to think it's a great base knowledge education. And as I mentioned the other night with Nathan, I've met quite a few people along the way. I have a few clients that are CFPs. They never planned on being a financial advisor. One was a lawyer who worked in the financial field. And this base knowledge is great if you're going to be self-employed. It's just great knowledge is safety. Knowledge protects you from anyone who would do anything but the best thing they can for you. That's where we're leading to tonight. Those of you who are not aware, there are some pretty heavy-duty Department of Labor rules bearing down on us. And many of you, like many of our clients at our office, are receiving a letter that just says, hey, you know, you got to talk to me because we can no longer have an account with a commission in a retirement account. Have to be moved to some sort of a model, you know, greater diversification, rebalancing. There's a lot of good things to it. Commissions are not wrong by themselves. The problem is certain percentage of people in the financial business just can't give it up. And so, therefore, if you run into one of those people, you'll end up with whatever makes them the most commission every time. And so I'm all for the law of abolishing commissions in retirement accounts and moving all of those assets into a ongoing oversight model where someone is responsible to look at it on a regular basis, make sure it still meets your needs, make sure the funds inside are still efficient over time on an ongoing basis. When you're very young, or even moderately young, I think buying good growth mutual funds and just keeping them is a fine strategy, something I believe, something I did myself. But now I'm 58 years old, and I have a pile of money now for my retirement, as we all should at 58. And I don't want a big, big decline in that value at my age. So I'm down to about half stocks. Most of my clients that are near my age, I usually recommend the same. The beauty of the financial biz is that there are no hard rules. You can do whatever you like, but you're not going to be able to have a commissionable retirement account with a professional unless the laws back off. At this point, it doesn't look like it. The rules are requiring anyone who handles a retirement account, that's me, be a fiduciary. A fiduciary just means that your legal obligation is to do the what's best for the customer. Yeah, you get paid a fee, but to do what's best for the customer. In the commissionable business, most people in that business will do the right thing for you, I believe. And it's always a small percentage of people who cause these problems. And you, many of you are in other professions, and I'm sure you've had these experiences where you had to jump through hurdles because of the behavior of a small group. But I am all for it. We have to have a situation where any one of you can walk into any financial office when it comes to your retirement money, at least, and know that the person that handles the account for you will not get paid more for recommending one thing versus the other. And that's why this is happening. I'm all for it. We've been talking about it for an awful long time. And accounts really of $250,000 and up have been handled that way in my office for over 15 years now. So this is nothing new to us. We're all for it. It's difficult and awkward to handle smaller accounts because 10, 20 years ago, the fees were much higher. There really was no accommodation for volume to get a reduction. But today, a lot of things have changed. And the cost of having someone actually manage an account for you has never been lower. It's kind of funny. I thought the other day that how we all talk about how we need more and more and more income to keep making a living, right? Because the cost of things go up. And I'm in a profession that for 38 years in a row, I've been expected to work cheaper, 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 less, less, less. And for 38 years, we've had to do more to earn more. It's the only way you could get it done. So this move is going to rock a lot of worlds, not mine, because I've been here for a decade or two on the majority of my client accounts, but smaller accounts that were not in active status was because it was not deemed to be cost-effective or necessary for the younger person with the pedal down. Good growth mutual funds, you know, keep buying them on a regular basis if you can, like 401k, or if not, you can do it in a private account. But again, if that's who you were, that was fine. It probably worked beautifully. I have many clients where it worked beautifully. But as the person gets older and the amount gets larger, I do think that the game changes. And we all change our view. When we're very young, our main priority on the money is how fast is it growing? At some point, and we're all different, I'm there. you know, protecting what I've got is important. I never thought about that when I was 30. Also, having the portfolio make current income, even though I don't want any income from it now. See, dividends are proof of profitability, so I shoot for a 6% total return on my retirement account, getting 3% of that from dividends. The reason I like doing that is clients that want to take income can take the dividend only, which means you're not using principal, and take 3% on your money. That's a nice little option. Or they can take more, because in the long run, the portfolio is designed to have both income and growth. But the dividend, I like my money to look like an apartment building these days. You know, when I was younger, I wanted my retirement account to look like a good piece of land that I hoped would grow fast, you know, because I didn't need anything from the money. Well, I'm almost 60, so I'm not planning on retiring soon at all. Those of you who are clients, don't be concerned. I plan on being around for another 10 years minimum, probably a little more than that. Depending on health issues will probably be what governs mine. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. We're talking about the markets today, all ablaze, all record highs, all four markets, very positive. The message here is don't jump in. Do not borrow money to invest, ever. Don't ever do it. I have never done it in 38 years, have never recommended anyone do it. Matter of fact, in our office, it's an office policy. You cannot buy on margin. So if someone came in with a very significant amount of money and said, we want to do this and we want you to use leverage, we want you to borrow to maximize our returns, we'd say, stop. We're not the right people for you. I don't know who is to do that anymore after what the financial profession went through in 08, 09 debacle. You know, what we learned from all that. We learned to be humbler, hopefully. We learned to be more careful, hopefully. And I learned to be more dividend-minded. So even in your 50s, I think you should be seeking half of your total return from dividends. So as an example, I have a portfolio, 6% targeted return, 8 years, it's average right around there. And how about half of that comes from dividends? That way, I feel that if I could always take the dividends only if I needed them and, you know, and get a subsidy in my retirement without ever using any of my principal. Using the new money only is a good feeling when you're drawing on your account because it preserves your principal. Now, if you need more than 3%, you'll need to do it a little bit differently than that. But I find a good rule of thumb for a lot of people here in New England, who many of them are pensioners, have some base benefits coming in, that 3% off of their savings, liquid money, is quite a nice supplement to the other things that they have going on. So if this is something that seems appealing to you, talk to the people that you work with and ask them about how much dividend does the account make as a ratio of the long-term return. And I think if you're around my age, 58, that it should be about half. I don't think you should be targeting much above 6 if you're close to retirement. There's a risk to that. High returns result in long tumbles at some point. Unless you have the unique ability to market time and take things out before it happens, but I really don't believe that most of you, and I don't believe that I do, have the ability to predict markets in that way. But when I return from our first break here, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the financial world right now and why you haven't you heard me talk an awful lot about the Trump factor in the U.S. stock market. We'll be right back. Vanilla. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. Hey, this is Steve Bove, certified financial planner professional, suggesting at least that a good part of your research into investments, if you do that, that you use your eyes, not your ears. Try not to listen to an awful lot. I don't. I really don't. I look at everything, but I listen to little. Listening catches salesmanship. Listening catches twisted political views. So listening to people about investments is tough, especially if you're doing research. Best to study charts and graphs. It's just data, right? There's no emotion. There's no person involved. It's just facts, man. Now, for a year now, we've been talking about the risk in the bond market. We don't think of that very often because stocks are considered quite a bit riskier. And I had mentioned for the last year or so, my favorite category of bonds was floating rate bonds, and I haven't changed on that at all. In September of last year, something pretty drastic happened. The value of, I'm not going to mention the name because there's no need to, but it's a long-term treasury fund. So this is a mutual fund, very well-known company, an excellent company, that invests in long-term treasuries. And that's traditionally considered one of the safest things around. Well, we had talked about the risk of that, and as interest rates rose, those bonds would be, the prices would be suppressed. Well, we've had rising interest rates now for a while, and here we are. I'm looking at the chart because I'd rather use my eyes than my ears. I'd rather look than listen. And those bond funds, if you own them, are down 15% in 6 months in value. Can you imagine that clip? Imagine if it's down 30% a year. It could be. It could easily be down that much. The fund I'm talking about has average maturities that are moderate. They're not really long. If you happen to have, if you own 30-year treasuries, individual bonds, or if you have, a long-duration bond fund, I think that's something you need to take a real close look at. The bond market had the best 10 years in history, and it ended in September. I believe that we will have a reversion to the mean, and as interest rates rise, that's the worst thing that can happen for long-term bonds. Now, there's lots of kinds of bonds, folks. My opinion only, two best categories right now are floating rate and short duration, but none of the ones that I open the show talking about. 20-year, 30-year bonds are dangerous when rates are rising. They serve very well in pension funds. Because the bulk of the money stays in forever, right? We all take income from it, but if you heard of the Harvard Pension Trust, it's 16 gazillion. 20 years from now, it's going to be 21 gazillion. So there's always principal in there. So those type of long bonds are very suitable, I think, to those type of institutional accounts, if you will. But for you and I think, that, especially right now anyway, they're dangerous. When rates are high and falling, that's the time to own that stuff. We are at the opposite end of the rainbow. Rates are low and rising. You don't want to own long-term bonds, and I don't have any, and neither do my clients. Now, what do you do if you own one of these? Well, it's case by case. You got to take a look. If it's all you own and you had a big amount in there and you didn't get to it in time, I'd say spin out of it gradually over a few months. Don't do it all at once. But if it represents a a small portion of your, but even if you did it now, you're down 15%. These are funds that are designed to make 3 to 4%. It'll take you 4 years to get it back. And don't think that this price fluctuation is not like stocks. It doesn't have to automatically rebound because this is being driven by something else. Now, before I went to the break, I mentioned to you or I asked you, had you any of you wondered why? I've had a few clients ask me that are fans of the show. But most of them didn't have to ask because they already knew the answer. The new president is saying some good things that the markets tend to like, obviously. You see the performance. And we're hearing all about, you know, the U.S. stocks, U.S. stocks, U.S. This is all everyone's obsessed with is U.S. stocks. Now, I own a proper amount of them in my accounts, and so do my clients, and we probably always will. U.S. is my favorite country to invest in. But the reason I didn't get hyped up about the Trump market was because I really believed, and I believe I'm right now more than ever, that I saw something much bigger happening that had to be noticed as an investment person, and that was the emerging markets. The last time interest rates rose here in the U.S., June of 2004 to June of 2006, during 2 years, the S&P 500 gained 10%. Europe sectors gained about 30 or 40, and emerging markets gained about 70. They're a real stickler type of investment. Seems to be the best time to own them is when rates are rising in the U.S. And year-to-date, right now, emerging markets funds on average are up about 8%, when the S&P, I think, is up 3. So that's almost triple. That's exactly what happened the last time rates rose. Emerging markets lead the way. Europe is right behind it. And then U.S. in the trailing place, which is opposite of what we usually have. The long-term trend of the world markets are U.S. number one, then Europe, and then emerging markets. Emerging markets are more spiky. The broader markets of Europe and America are more reliable and more dependable. But emerging markets is not something you go out and put all of your account in now, folks. I wouldn't go any more than 20% for anyone. 10 maybe, if you're a little shy about things, up to 20. The fund that I suggest to people, EEM is a symbol for a emerging markets ETF. It just went off the top of my head. Very low cost, very efficient. DVYE is another one. These are regional funds, keep in mind. They're not countries specific. There's usually going to be, you know, many, many different countries. So I would consider them a regional fund, which is why I would allow up to 20% in them. Normally, I would limit it at 10 to be diversified, but 20% I think is okay. If you're talking about a holding that represents more than one nation, actually a whole region of the world, but it's a category that universally don't see in portfolios that I'm asked to review. Very seldom see it as an option in a 401k plan. Actually, this is probably a great time to point out why. If you have 401k money in an old employer, it's probably best to get it out of there and get it into a professional portfolio, because there's a lot of things in the world that you might want to have in your account right now. We're in a very strange time. And many of those holdings, like emerging markets, like floating rate bonds, I think that floating rate bonds are the most interesting bond category right now, and emerging markets are the most interesting stock category. And guess what? Many 401k plans have neither available. Now, in all fairness to the 401k plan, if they gave you 310,000 choices, because that's how many choices I have in a private account, it would probably just overwhelm most people, and it really wouldn't help you at all, you know. But it is a unique time where the type of things in the world that are best to own are not that easy to find. They're very easy to find in a privately managed account, because a manager of an account like myself, if it's an independent open market account, I have the ability to place assets in any investment anywhere. One reason is because we don't require a commission from the investment itself. The client pays us a management fee. And this is where I mentioned in the beginning of the program, the Department of Labor is trying to get all retirement accounts by the end of this year into that status. What the biggest advantage is that it would create a situation where never again could a broker or a financial person recommend what made them the most money to a customer, because on a fee account, the professional person gets paid the same amount no matter what they put the money in, no matter what's recommended. I've been talking about this for 5, 6, 7 years now on the air. We always believe that when you're older and the accounts are larger, then that is absolutely the way to do it. And I also feel just as strongly that if you are younger, very young, you know, 20 and 30, and you just need a good growth fund, plow the money in for a while. You know, you have an account balance of $5,700. You know, it'll be $12,000 next year. There are some people that put that away every month at age 50, and that could be an account balance. So I think it's very different if you're younger and you're comfortable with a much higher risk level. And if your strategy in your investments is, you know, pedal to the metal and don't look back, I think that's a fine strategy for the younger group. I don't think you need an awful lot of oversight on the accounts. I think you can buy good things and hang on to them. But the laws, which are designed to protect all of us, by stopping a small percentage of us, are on upon us as we speak. So when I come back from the break at the bottom of the hour, if you've been speaking with anyone in the financial world about this and have any questions about these changes, if you're being told by the people you deal with that you have to change your account to something new, that's true. It's not every company yet,
winter's
but eventually it will be, and it surely will be a major thing,
business,
I think,
so
by the end of the year.
So
we'll be, this is the Money Talk Show, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to AM 790, your station for talk and business. Thank you for joining us for many decades. Many of you have met this afternoon in the office with a client who's been with us for a long time. And people talk about that pretty often, 20 years or so. It's very nice. I had a client ask me a few years back how old I was when he started with me. He asked me if I was 9 when he opened the account with me because he was 86 and I'm 58 with 38 years experience. So yes, I did actually do my first investment transaction with the public in 1980. So that is 38 years. One of the more profound things I've learned is the concept I've shared with you many times of investing with your eyes, not your ears. Spiky investments you need to look at on charts. Spiky like gold, very up and down swings, you know, no consistent growth. Crazy spurts and then crazy fall downs. And when gold was at the high point of $1,700 an ounce, had you looked at a chart of it, I don't believe you would have thought of buying any at that point. Yet if you listened to the hype in the news, you would have. So as I shared with you all, many of you are smiling right now because you're probably in the group that I did this with. When the gold was hyped out, I carried around with me a chart in my pocket. I carried it when I was working. I carried it when I wasn't working. And even on a weekend, you know, at a local lounge, you'd run into someone who knew the show, recognized my voice, and say, "Hey, Steve, do you mind if I ask you just one question?" I say, "Call the show." You know, they say, "Ah, well, you know, do you mind?" I said, "No, I don't mind." And they would ask me about gold, and I would just take the chart out and show it to them. And every time, without hesitation, they said, "Thank you so much," because it looked like the wave on the perfect storm. And I do know, I'm not the brightest bulb in the box, but I do know that I don't want to buy anything. When I look at an investment, I look at a chart of an investment, if it's the highest it's ever been, I'm not that interested. And at that point, at $1,700 an ounce, it was at that point, and the line did look ridiculous. It scared me, and I didn't think for 1 minute that it was a good time to buy. Turned out that time, at least, that was right. But it wasn't any kind of crystal ball that helped me make that decision. It was investing with my eyes instead of my ears. Because everything I heard at that time told me the price of gold was going to $5,000. I had other professionals almost laugh at me when I told them I sold it all at $1,700 an ounce. And it has not been anywhere near that since then. Where are we now? $1,100, $1,200, something like that. Don't like it in general. Have a few clients that own it. Usually it's somebody over 80, and it's like a defense mechanism. And it's not a lot, a 5% position, something like that. I have a couple of other clients that are had it in their portfolio, bought it high, and I've been trying to nurse them out of it. I just happen to, and this is, again, just my opinion, if you're looking for something to hedge for disasters, I like real estate. Real estate that pays income, especially. I have a real estate stock in my portfolio that pays a dividend of about 4% and should do very well as interest rates rise. It's a bit of a hedge against the stock market because it's not the stock market. It's real estate, rental, commercial property type stuff, you know, so it's not the stock market. It has its own volatility, its own behavior patterns, but it should behave somewhat differently. Now, let's go over go over this one more time. Why is real estate a good thing to have when rates rise? Because when interest rates rise, so do mortgages. When mortgages rise, so do rents. When rents rise, so does the value of your rental property. Simple example. You try to sell the property today, and the real estate agent tells you, yeah, it's worth about $300. You know, they do some comparable stuff like that. And they come back to you and tell you, you know, $300,000 is the estimated value of that property. 2 years later, if the market itself hasn't changed much, but your rents are now up 20%, guess what? The house is worth more because it generates more income. As interest rates rise, mortgage rates rise. As mortgage rates rise, rents rise. As rents rise, so does the value of rental property. So, as a hedge, I would suggest real estate instead of gold. Although I will say there are some highly credible people in the financial world who don't agree with that, and I still don't get it, which is why you all have to understand there are opinions in here. I think if you look at a chart of the history of gold, and a website for that is a good one, it's called goldpricehistory.com, and there are charts in there of all kinds of metals and the price of over time. And before you invest in gold, I beg of you to see that chart. If you can't find that chart, you drop me a note here, give me an email or something. I'll get you that chart. It doesn't mean that gold can't go up. It's actually doing pretty well year to date right now. But if you look at the behavior pattern of it, you get an idea for, you know, the personality of it. When you look at charts of investments, it's sort of like people. You know, I'm kind of a hyped up guy. You know, my son Nathan's a cool cat. So he's a different cat. His chart looks a little different. It's more steady. Mine would be a little more wiggly, you know. And investments I've always thought were a lot like people. The emerging markets I've always referred to as the children in the family. They're still growing at a fast rate. They can run faster than me. They have way more energy than I do. And they also bounce off walls and split their lip more often than I do. I 55-year-old men in good shape shouldn't be falling down, right? But little children do it all the time, and they're very fit. So emerging markets are like children. So if you're a really, really conservative person, you might not want to go near this. Or maybe have a holding of 5%. For most people, I like 10. Depending on when you buy it, I think up to 20 is okay. Emerging markets are emerging, in my opinion. Interest rates are rising here in the U.S. That's really helpful for those markets to do well. I wanted to share with you tonight, Nathan and I were talking about the CFP program, and you can study this online. Nathan's doing it through Bryant College. I did it through PC. And just get this certification for your own sake, for your own further advancement of your own knowledge. And I'll tell you what, knowledge is power. My father was an auto mechanic. I know a lot about cars, not as much as a mechanic today does, but I know enough that I can never be railroaded or misled. And that's what knowledge does. It allows you to figure out who's who, you know. This is the Certified Financial Planner Code of Ethics. Principle one, integrity, to provide professional services with integrity. It means don't exaggerate. Don't play head games. Don't try to motivate your clients by scaring them. None of that's professional. Objectivity, provide professional services objectively. It means have yourself structured in your business that you can be objective. If you only sell one product for one company, you're not objective. Competence, of course, to maintain the knowledge and skill necessary to provide professional services competently. That's called ongoing education. I have to start next week, and I have to do 30 hours by the end of May to maintain my CFP. I also have many hours of continuing education requirements within my own brokerage company. So ask the people you work with what type of mandatory continuing education do they participate in? It's a very good question. Fairness, of course, be fair and reasonable in all professional relationships, and disclose conflicts of interest. I've shared a big one with you all. I said before that at my age now, if I were to meet someone that was my age and said, I have $500,000, but I want it to be $3 million. I want to open an account with you, Mr. Bove. I want you to manage it for me. I'm happy to pay you whatever your fee is, and I want to be really aggressive. I would say, stop right there. I don't believe that's not my sweet spot. I think you need someone who does that all the time. Because the majority of people at my age don't want to be aggressive. So I have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of clients been working on for decades who have a different philosophy about how to handle money at that age. So if you're if you were much older and you had a big account. Now, if you're very young, I might be a little more comfortable with it. But occasionally I meet people who are older and feel that they're really behind the eight ball, and now they have to play catch-up. That's a dangerous trap, because now you're investing in ways that are really not suitable for you at your age. And if you do have a decline that surprises you at 62, it's hard to not say to yourself, well, I better take it out now before it goes down more at my age. And now you bought high and sold low. So disclosing any type of conflicts in your own viewpoint is just part of being a good, honest person, I guess, right? Professionalism, act in a manner that demonstrates exemplary professional conduct. That means be alert, be ready, be prepared, and be efficient with your time. I often have people in my office that tell me the reason that they want to leave where they are with their accounts. And sometimes I've looked at the accounts and said, you know what, this is good work. And I'd be happy to say that if it's true. I said it today in my office to a client. I said, those people you're working with, they are doing a great job. I understand. But, you know, if that's not the case, then maybe you need to poke around a little bit. But disclosing any conflicts is very, very important as far as what your skills are. You know, aggressive investing, trading stocks, a lot of movement, that's a different skill. What I do is much more macro than that, and it's important for people to understand that. So if you're looking for a stock trader or someone who, you know, you can talk to six times in a day, you're not going to get me on the phone six times in one day. I'm in meetings because what we do is more macro. So a broker is a little different thing, and if you want to trade stocks and be aggressive and do it that way, then a broker has a very valuable skill in the marketplace today. I would just say that I think that they're kind of a dying breed, unfortunately. Because the industry in general is moving more towards macro management and reducing risk. You know, just 30 years ago, a large part of our population had a pension plan for their retirement. Today, they have a 401k plan instead. And so when you have a pension plan, there's no risk at all. If you have a 401k plan and you set it up incorrectly, it could be tremendous risk. Yet both represent your substance of your retirement planning needs. So be very, very careful. Take a look at your plan right now, folks. If you're anywhere near my age and you've got a good balance in there, give me a call on the show next week or something. Just let me know what your percent stocks are in that 401k. And I'm going to suggest that if you're anywhere near my age, that you have it around half, not a lot higher than that. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Happy Friday, everyone. Hope you had a good week. I hope your money had a good week. I hope you had a good week first, though, health-wise, of course. And spirit, money's important. Surely not number one, but it's somewhere on the list, right? Hey, if you're looking for a CFP professional, just Google Find a CFP Pro, and you'll see a website there. That's the CFP board. And while I was on the break waiting for you all to come back, I went in there and put in my zip code right on the front page. You don't have to give any information. I put my zip code in Smithfield, hit the button to search out a financial plan of CFPs in the area. And the second name that popped up is lovely Donna Soa. And then, of course, the old guys, we don't have our picture in here, Don and I. But there's a list here of many, many local CFPs that you could talk to about your needs. You can sort by alphabetically, by minimum assets that they'll take to see if they suit you. You can also sort by specialty, accounting, asset allocation, banking, business succession. That's one I have no skills in. So if you're looking for a certified financial planner to help you with business succession, no, I'm not the right guy for that. I mean, I might know more than you do about it, but you need somebody that knows everything about it, right? So that back to that code of ethics again about disclosing any conflicts of interest. Telling somebody, I know you want to pay me to do this, but I haven't done that much of it. And I really think you'd be better off having someone who's done a lot of it, right? Good financial planners should be like good doctors. You're happy to recommend the doctor up the street if that's what's best for the patient, you know? So visit the CFP website and find yourself a local CFP professional if you'd like. And invest with your eyes at least as much as your ears. We mostly use our ears. And a lot of junk gets in there. It can in eyes, too, if you're reading ads. When I say invest with your eyes, I mean charts. Raw data. I don't want to hear anyone's opinion of it. Now, I do listen to opinions, but when I'm doing that type of research, I don't want opinions. I just want raw data. And the only way you can realistically have a shot at realizing where to be as rates rise is to be able to go back and look at charts and see what happened last time. Now, do things repeat exactly? No, seldom. Do they repeat mostly? Yes. Major changes like taxes dropping, interest rates rising, no matter when they happen, they have very similar effect in the economy on a macro sense. Of course, not every aspect of it will be the same as it was, you know, when it happened 12 years ago. But the macro things don't change too much. Again, year-to-date, emerging markets up 8.5%, one of the funds I know of. S&P's up about 3.5%. Europe about 4%. The real estate I talked about was up about 4%. So I think it's fascinating that how, because of the media, and again, they get knocked on enough. I don't mean to knock on them. I just mean it makes sense that they would report the S&P 500 to you all and talk about that kind of exclusively, because they don't have time to cover everything, right? There's too many things. They don't have an hour like I do here. So in all fairness to them, it's hard for them to do that. But if you only use your ears right now, you're going to think the U.S. stock market's the best one in the world, and it is not. Europe and emerging markets are performing better year-to-date and with better dividends as well. So eyes will teach you that. If you only use your ears, you'll never, ever, unless you listen to this show, and that's a little bit different again because we don't sell anything here on the program. But if you're listening to any kind of radio programs that where people are selling products or peddling things or asking you to call their office, we don't do that. If you'd like to call the station at 437-5000, we'd be happy to talk with you or answer any questions that you might have. And if you have the need for it, a great way to find a good financial planner today is to visit one of these websites, the CFP board website. Google Find a CFP Pro and go there and just put in your zip code. And you can get to look at people. And there's some pictures in there, some not. I haven't updated my picture in years, so they left it out. But Donna's is in there, and she looks great. Many other local CFPs that I know who they are. I'm not going to mention their names because we don't give them free advertising, even though we love and respect them and think they're fine professionals. We're not giving them free advertising. But it's a great way, I think, for anyone who doesn't have an angle on it, you know? I mean, for example, if you're 40 and looking for someone like this, but your mom was a CPA, ask her. I bet you she knows locally who's who, right? Or some member in the family that you think was financially savvy, ask them who they've worked with. I love it I love many things about what I do, many, many things, fortunately. One of the things I get is most rewarding is when I get referrals from existing clients, which happens very often. Again, thank you to all of you that do that. And people come in and they say to me, did I get it right? Did Carol tell me that she'd been working with you for 20 years? I look at the file, go, 24, actually, you know. And so that's powerful, because if you're dealing with anybody on any issue in life in a spotty basis, you never really get to know them that well, you know. But I think if someone was to make a recommendation to anyone on anything that they've dealt with the person for 20 years, that's a pretty good referral. And the odds are very high that you're being directed to the right person, because in 20 years, if there was something not quite right about the way they operate, I think that person would have picked up on it or noticed it, you know. Very young people are fooled easy. I notice the gray hairs are not. Not that I try to fool them, but they come in my office when people have tried to fool them, and they're very, very sharp, sharper than the salespeople think they are about what's going on. And again, the majority of people in the financial business will do the right thing, want to do the right thing for you. And for the record, I'm all for all of us being fiduciaries. A fiduciary title means that push comes to shove, you better be able to prove that whatever you did that's in question, that at the moment it was in the best interest of the customer. If you can't prove that, you have a problem. Now, that should be, I think it's the way that it should be. I think I'm glad that doctors are handled that way, right? If a doctor gives you the wrong medication and it makes you sick, because he made a higher commission on the medication, he's going to have a big problem if you can prove that, right? Career-ending problem. So doctors have been fiduciaries for a long time. CPAs act in that manner as well. They charge you a fee for their time, so there's no bias there. Really only in the financial business has there been this problem where an individual could be recommending to you only what is in their best interest, not yours. And again, as a competitive animal out in the world in the financial business, I believe it's a small group of people. I believe the majority of the faces I see on this website that you can talk to are good people that want to do the right thing for you, and I think that it's not as dangerous out there as you might think. But there are those people, and to think about it, even if there weren't stories that you've heard that would scare you, when you're talking about your money, especially your life savings, I would think that you would want to put a lot of scrutiny into who you trust. And I think that's perfectly reasonable in a way that you should approach it. It has often surprised me how many people don't ask a lot of questions, and I have to kind of force-feed them things. And they say things like, yeah, you'll take care of it. Well, you're right about that, but you need to understand. One of the reasons that I really like the fiduciary standard is the cost of your advisor is clearly listed. If you have commissionable accounts, you never know, unless the very good commission person, and there are many of them, explained it to you thoroughly, explained how they got paid, where it comes from. But 7 years later, not only are you not going to remember that, it's nowhere listed on your statement, where if you have a fiduciary responsibility, and I think in most cases, you will be able to see on the statement clearly every quarter, it'll say management fee, and it's deducted. And you can just look at that, multiply it by four. That's what it's costing you per year. It's going to come out in the 1% range on average. If not on larger accounts, you're paying too much, in my opinion. And this methodology lets you as the customer evaluate what you're paying and then decide, is what I'm getting in return worth it? The other thing I love about the fiduciary standard, and it's not for everyone, is that accounts handled this way have no penalties for closing. So I would think if I was the customer, and I'd be a tough one, I think. I'd be pretty demanding. The fact that I can fire you anytime I want without a penalty, I think that keeps you on your toes, young man. So I think if you're starting a new relationship right now, one of the more important questions to ask is, are you going to work with me on a fee basis? I would suggest you do that. And also, be sure that your account doesn't have any penalties for closing so that if you're not treated correctly or not serviced correctly, you can fire these people and find someone who will appreciate you more. This is the Money Talk Show with Steve Bove on Friday and Wednesday nights. Tune in Monday night for Don Soa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Have a good, safe weekend. I was thinking of looking at home.